Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial.
And hello, welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 128. And we have a kind of an interesting show lined up for you today. Thanks for joining me. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what's happening in the equity markets on a global basis. We've seen the hints of government saying right now that, well, you know, we're going to be maybe draining some of the liquidity. It started out with China, if you remember, and we saw that market back in August down 21%, snap back a little bit in the early parts of September, and then start to again slide. We've seen a concerning discussion by some of the European area about the euro. They're concerned that the euro is way too expensive right now, and that's going to stunt the growth and cause a significant problem for them in a competitive nature on a global basis. And we've also seen that other countries are really kind of working on currency issues, and that has been really seeing a big reaction in the markets. If you think about what's gone on lately, for a while there, we were seeing the reaction in the markets, particularly the commodities, metals, oils, and the energy complex, be very reliant on what's happening with the dollar. As a matter of fact, for a while we were asking, is it the dollar that's moving the metals and commodity markets, particularly in oil and natural gas, or is it supplies, or is the oil and natural gas and commodity markets moving the dollar? One of the things we do know is that the government of the U.S., the government of the Western Europe, Eastern Europe, Asia, Latin America, are all spending an enormous amount and have committed to an enormous amount of stimulus. There's no question about that. I don't think anybody here has a question about that. But at the same time, you have to wonder what's the effect. Well, we've said inflation eventually is going to be the thing that happens, and you're going to see inflation ramping up over time. Is it now? Well, not now, because demand is still low. And when we get to the point that we still have that massive amount of stimulus, there'll be that inflection point that we see the stimulus starting to affect the demand side of things, and that's when you have inflation. We've already seen the move, of course, in oil. We just think about it. You know, it went up, what, 100% or 80% from the lows this year to where it is now. Yes, it's backed off a bit, but at the same time, that is inflationary in general. Food prices still are low, but at the same time, we're seeing pricing increase. Sugar hit, I think, a 22-year high last week or so. Wheat is still in bad shape, but you know, we're again seeing some indications of movement there. We've also seen copper prices and steel prices, and even though they're being negotiated, them, you know, as well moving up. These will all transfer into or translate into an inflationary environment sometime. That doesn't mean it has to be runaway inflation like we saw back in the 80s, but yet it will move out of a deflationary environment. You know, of course, unless things are just, you know, so bad that this is never going to pick up. But sometime in the future, the trillions of dollars of stimulus that we've seen on a worldwide basis should be able to provide at least a stoppage of the, you know, the downdraft that we've seen in economic activity. We're already seeing that German business and consumer confidence, which you have to be careful because they count the stock market moving up, that confidence level is almost like a double counting there. But yet it still is moving up very nicely. Consumer confidence in the U.S. is moving up nicely. But we did see some things that have happened recently that have been a bit of a concern. And let me share those with you. And then we'll get back to the dollar in a second. One of the things that we saw was this whole idea of the second derivative. You know, we hear about that. That's this kind of, as they say at PIMCO, and Muhammad Al-Arian says that it's the new normal, where we have kind of a lower base, that demand will be diminished for a long time. And what we're seeing now is a bit of a reset of that demand level. And we've also heard about the less, you know, less bad. Things are less bad than they were. Well, where are we now? That's the big question. Well, now, for example, this week, last week, we saw the leading indicators that were released earlier in the week. And those looked less good. Yes, that year over year, they looked a bit better. But month over month, they're starting to sag a little bit. Now, of course, you have to realize that the comparative times, we've talked about this before, the comparative times that we're looking at either earnings or economic information is from a very, very low base. And with that in mind, you have to wonder, when the comparatives stop being as easy as they are when looking at a year over year, because that's what we all are consumed with, it seems, you know, what's going to happen then? And at this point, we're seeing analysts upgrading a lot of, you know, stocks. We're seeing things like GE just get, you know, just pushed really incredibly far. Citi, Bank of America, the banks have been moving very well. And also names that we wouldn't think, like the casino names are doing IPOs. There was a massive amount of inventory of supply, that we call it, that's being dumped on this market in the form of either IPOs or secondaries or debt releases. In other words, credit offerings or bond offerings. And it's being done by the quality companies. It's being done by the junk companies. And what's happening is we're seeing a narrowing of the spreads, without getting too complex here, but we're getting a narrowing of the spreads, almost like there's this incredible, insatiable appetite for credit at any level. You know, the belief there is that, why is this happening? You know, you may scratch your head and say, now, why in the world would anybody want to buy junk bonds at this point? I mean, companies are still in trouble. We know this. We know that the economics are just stabilizing, okay, but from where do we go at this point? Well, the reason is because many investors believe there is a, not an implicit, but yet there is a backup, a backdrop, you know, there is the government that will not allow any company to fail. Remember, a few weeks ago, we were all very concerned about CIT. That was the commercial lender for small businesses. They would lend for business expansion, but on a small basis, the medium to small businesses, your copy machines, your phone systems, you know, maybe furniture. It could be scanning systems, et cetera. Those are the companies, that's the company that would lend to that. Now, with many of these small to mid-sized companies, you know, getting basically blown out of business in this last drop that we've seen over the last 2 years, well, they're not able to repay as easily, obviously. And you know what happens from there. So CIT was in a real big bind. They needed $4 billion to stay afloat. As a matter of fact, we're asking the government declined. Now CIT gets about $1 billion, $1.5 billion backdrop, and all of a sudden everything's fine. We don't even hear about them anymore. Commercial mortgages, what's happening there? We know there's a big problem on resets happening with commercial mortgages in the mid part of 2010, not too far off from here. But yet we're hearing that possibly there's going to be, or there's going to be at this point, a tax benefit, a waiver. Have you heard this? There's a waiver of mortgage forgiveness if negotiated with the business and the bank. So in other words, if you have a $10 million mortgage that you can't pay and the payment's too high, maybe you could renegotiate it down to $8 million because your property value is a lot less here. And that $2 million differential right now, that's basically forgiveness, you don't have to pay taxes on, as the new rulings just went into effect, I guess, this week or last week. And these are the kind of things that this administration is doing. And while it is very constructive in the short term, the question that everybody keeps on asking is, you know, what's the destructive nature in the long term? We add the healthcare issue on top of it. That's supposed to be a zero deficit item, but yet we'll have a $9 trillion deficit in the future. And this market is starting to, you know, wonder what exactly is happening here. How are we going to actually move ahead at this point where the P.E. ratio on the S&P is about 20? Some people say that it still has some range to run because of the incredible amount of liquidity in the markets and the, you know, zero interest rate. The yield curve has is in such a nature that it's really pointing towards an upward slope here, where PE can really run far. Companies are gathering assets through the IPOs and the secondaries at a record pace, but yet at the same time, as we talk about, insiders are selling. Lots of things going on there. Well, we're going to talk about some of this, particularly about the dollar. Let's get back to that now. And then we're going to bring on Art Cashin, who is the managing director, the floor director of UBS. And you see him all the time. He's on, I think he's on almost every single day on CNBC. But I talked to him yesterday, and he is willing to come aboard and talk a little bit about this. But let's talk about the dollar for a second. The dollar. Now, if you've noticed what's happening, we've seen the dollar just sag. I mean, it is on one hand, we've always talked about that, and we've heard about that the dollar policy, the U.S. dollar policy, is to have a strong dollar. That is the core part of a philosophy that says that we want to have a strong dollar, and that's good for our country and good for our economy. Yet the dollar just, you know, sagged down to nothing lately, not at the lows yet, because right now there's a risk appetite for other countries. Brazil was recently upgraded. Their credit rating was upgraded, which has been excellent for them. And we're seeing that, you know, countries like, for example, Australia, New Zealand, their currency is so strong right now because they have something backing it up. We're off the gold standard. And not to sound like some of the people who are all, you know, gold bugs and, you know, down on the dollar, just telling you what's happening right now. But yet at the same time, what we're seeing is when right now the relationship, which we talked about earlier a minute ago, about how the dollar and the and oil, dollar commodities, et cetera, dollar stocks is the new driver. Dollar down, stocks up. Dollar up, stocks down. U.S.-based and pretty much world-based. Well, the question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to maybe be buying the dollar right now if stocks are starting to peak out here? And even though there is some run left, you know, is the dollar going to fall much further from here? We're already seeing that the TALF, T-A-L-F, which is a treasury plan to auction and to bring in assets and, of course, to help the companies who need additional help, is winding down. As a matter of fact, they cut it this week. We're talking about possibly reverse repos that are going to drain some of the liquidity in the markets over time. And it's being hinting around and talking around about, you know, starting to slow down the overall movement of this. So I think that right now there's a time to look at your charts, look at the market, whereas, you know, you need to understand that the dollar is a very important part of all this, and investors are very spooked right now. They've been spooked for a while. You notice that. One day up, one day down. 2 days up, one day down. As a matter of fact, there was an interesting number that 0.34% on the S&P 500 down last Monday was the lowest, the worst in like 3 weeks for a fall of the S&P 500. A third of a percent with all of this movement is the worst that it's been. And every time there's a drop, it seems like it's finding support and putting money back in. But at the same time, you find an individual stock that doesn't meet estimates, and boy, oh boy, they're blowing it out of the water right now. Quite amazing. So I think it's time to reevaluate positions, reevaluate sell stops. We have modified our sell stops when we manage money for clients because, you know, the ranges have been so great right now. We take a smaller position. Think about this for a second. Instead of having a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% stop, whatever your number is, that maybe you want to move out of. And then, of course, you know, looking at each stock individually, each position, each ETFs, maybe what you should think about is taking a partial position, let's say a 1, 2% position, and then adding to that as it breaks above certain points, and then think about utilizing a stop instead of maybe 6%, but 12%. Now, instead of having a 5% position that you maybe have in one security in your portfolio, or 4%, buy half of the position first, and then consider thinking about expanding your stops. That may be help you in this market. That may help you in this market, because in this market the ranges are so dramatic, and then they bounce back up and move down again, and bounce back up and then move down. Classical kind of questioning environment of what's happening and where people should be investing. People want to buy in. They want to buy in. They want to buy in. Then they realize, wait a minute, did I buy too high at this point? Pull out real quickly, and then say, oh. Oh my gosh, I have seller's remorse. I want to get back in right now. Let me back in. And they buy back in. We've seen that over and over. You know, a company like STEC, S-T-E-C, came out with a report came out that there's some competition. Truth be known, there's no competition for some time. And this stock that we hold, we bought it recently on the drop down. If you take a chart and look at that, we bought a little bit early. But yet at the same time, we are thinking about, you know what, if it crosses our point, if it's going to take down, you know, we have about a 2% position. If it's going to come down, we're going to get out of it. But yet at the same time, we saw it move up 8% just the day after we bought it. And then it comes down about 5%. Then it goes up 4%. And then it comes down. And you know what? This is a classic kind of blow-off session. The question is, does the company still have the fundamentals? Do they still have the product? And is the news newsworthy enough to really push the stock that much lower? Just something to think about. Let's take a break. When we get back, we're going to talk with Art Cashin. And what I want you to do is consider two things. Number one, I saw that Amazon had my book on sale again. It's The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. If you want to learn about, you know, how we're doing this, check out the charting and all that. Check that out. And also, of course, the 14-minute video. If you're confused about what's going on in this market and you really don't know, and you want to just, you know, just check out maybe there's some other alternatives. You're sick of looking at the bouncing every day and having to monitor and manage it. Check it out, The Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. We manage money, $50,000 minimum. We have a 14-minute virtual tour, which is in the process of being updated. But it gives you the whole heart of what we do. Check that out. It's just go right over to the show notes for this episode at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check that out. And, of course, we'll be back talking with Art Cashin. And then we will talk about the dollar and ask what's on his mind. And then I'm going to answer a question that we had that came in from a listener. And, of course, if you want to send me something, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll be right back. Stick around. More coming up on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So we're back. We have Art Cashin. He's the Managing Director of UBS Financial Services, and he's on the floor. You see him all the time on CNBC in the morning, a gentleman with a lot to say and has been quite right for a long time. Art, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
So let's talk a little bit about the dollar. I know you've been talking about that for a while. It seems like the dollar is leading these markets.
It certainly does seem that way. And what has happened is when the dollar is strong, we see the stock market usually go down along with oil, most of the commodities, and it has become a little bit more pervasive, I would say, since it appears that the dollar is beginning to be used as a funding currency.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just a reserve, there people are, as they used to do with the yen carry trade, they seem to be using the dollar as a dollar carry trade.
But maybe like a dollar stock carry trade kind of thing.
Yeah, what you do is, it was, what they learned to do in Tokyo was, since they kept their interest rates close to zero for so long, you went in and you borrowed at a very low rate, as close to zero as you could get. You then protected yourself by basically shorting or selling out the currency that you just borrowed, which was the yen, and then you took that relatively free or cheap money. And if you were conservative, you might buy, at that time, U.S. Treasury bonds and get a higher yield and live off the difference. Some others went to places like Australia and New Zealand, where there was an even higher yield. And that went on for a good 20 years or more. And now it seems to be slipping into the dollar, where people are coming, borrowing here in the U.S., and then trying to short the dollar and putting the money elsewhere, sometimes into the stock market. So we see dollar weakness sometimes accompanied, or quite frequently accompanied, by rallies in stocks.
So what's happening on the floor? Is there, I mean, you've been down there a long time, and I talk to a lot of traders, I talk to a lot of people, a lot of investors that have either been in the business a long time, short time. There's a lot of confusion still about what exactly is going on between this, you know, craziness with ramping up of markets all of a sudden and ramping down and, you know, fundamental issues, and is it not fundamentals? It's just, you know, liquidity. What's going down there on the floor? What are they saying?
Well, the rally started as a sigh of relief rally that the end of the world had been postponed or even avoided. And then it began to take on a little bit of a life of its own. Again, people were finding very few alternatives to investment. And between the short covering that went on, which gave the rally a further life, and speculation. And I have I've been doing this close to 50 years, and I will tell you, the speculation evident in the rally was like none I had seen for a protracted period of time. They were buying almost lottery ticket stocks, you know, buying things at $2 and $3, and you saw that the stock of General Motors continued to trade after it went bankrupt and after the government said it is worthless. You will be able to get nothing back. The stock of Lehman Brothers continued to trade. So there was a high degree of speculation throughout the rally.
Yeah, it's still going on with AIG, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, same situation.
Yes, it is. There is a kind of Superman invincibility quality that's being picked up in some of these trades. You know, the belief that the Fed learned and the Treasury learned an absolutely dreadful lesson in the aftermath of letting Lehman go under is that many of these people feel they'll let no one go under.
Mm-hmm.
So you can almost take a shot in the dark and feel that the government will protect you from total disaster.
Right.
And I think that's part of the speculation we're seeing.
Right. And do you think that the auction process on the New York Stock Exchange is going to go away at any time soon?
Well, I would certainly hope not. I mean, as I say, I've been doing this nearly 50 years. I helped write many of the rules. It was a special way of doing business. There's nothing more honorable than the agency side of the business. The analogy I used was, the customer comes up and he hands you $100 and says, go in that cave and get me whatever, and you come back and deliver it to him at the fairest price you can get and bring him his change. And that's a pretty honorable way to do things. And conversely, all of the, you know, in the pre-electronic age, everything down here was your word is your bond. You and I might look at each other and I say sold, and we could have had a $10 or $50 million transaction without a lawyer present, without an accountant present, without a witness present, and we didn't even exchange contracts. I looked at you, you made note of my number on my badge, and we went off to do another contract another place. It
exactly.
was quite an exciting and quite an honorable way to do business, and I would not like to see it go away.
Sure. Last question. ETFs, the multiples, you know, 2x, 3x ETFs, are they causing havoc with these markets at all?
They are causing a good number of problems, and I think you're starting to see some of the brokerage firms, particularly the retail brokerage firms, walk away from them because a few things happen. They don't appear to fully perform as advertised, and they don't give you that triple and double and whatever. And in trying to attain it, it is suspected that late in the day, some of those whipsaw actions we see are some of the proponents of the leveraged ETFs trying to arbitrage to make up for that leverage, to catch up, as it were, to where their performance should be based on the market's action. So
yeah.
The belief, whether it's founded in fact or not, but it's a widespread belief down here, that they are a destabilizing factor.
I hear you. Art Cashin, Managing Director of UBS Financial Service, I appreciate your time today. You're a good man.
My pleasure.
Have a good
Thank
weekend,
you.
Buddy. Bye-bye. Well, that was great. Art Cashin talking about, he's a wealth of knowledge, isn't he? I like him. He has some great quotes that he's done. If you ever look up, check out the internet, go to Art Cashin comments and quotes. He has some really cool things. Kind of a modern-day market Yogi Berra. Anyway, I thought that I would answer a question. We have a question that came in that I thought was really interesting. A lot of times what I do is I answer them directly through email, but I thought I would kind of talk about this. This one is from Ed, and let's see if I know where he's from here. No, I can't tell where he's from. Anyway, he says, hi, Andrew. I'm a big fan of your podcast. Enjoy the range of articles and guests that you write and have. Here's a topic and question I have. Hey, thanks, first of all, Ed, for saying that. I appreciate that. He asks, what and who makes up the market? Quote, the market. We all talk about the amorphous entity, but rarely have I heard a breakdown of the constituents at any given time. For example, is it pension funds, hedge funds? A ride to this is, what are their motivations? Apart from their obvious one to profit, is there an understanding of the time frames, typical size of positions, buying patterns, etc.? You know, here's the thing. There's been a lot of discussion about this, but the trading on a daily basis right now seems to be made up from the high-frequency trading, and about 70% actually is close to, they say, about the trading on the New York Stock Exchange and through other methods. 60 to 70% could be the high-frequency. In other words, the computer systems that are, you know, trying to generate one-penny, two-penny trades from the trading. They have algorithms that try to be, I don't want to say artificial intelligence, but at least to predictive of directions for a stock or for, let's say, an ETF or futures, et cetera. Also, you have a futures action. You have a lot of movement by ETF companies that have to build. But then you have a good chunk of the rest of it is probably, about 20% or so in the mutual fund and managed money area, which is X, the high-frequency trading. And then the rest is retail, day traders in particular. Because if you think about it, the average retail investor is not going to be trading in and out. That's the day traders. That's the high-frequency trading. That could be the hedge funds. They're going to be buy and hold and hold on for a while, maybe buying a little bit. But that doesn't add up to a lot of volume. The volume really is all about the trading action that's out there. And the question you have about, obviously, their profit motivation, is there an understanding of that time frames? Well, high-frequency trading happens in 1 second or less. Now, the flash trading seems to be going by the wayside, which could be an interesting situation until that's mucked up, I'm sure, by the powers that be. There is this discussion of, flash trading also and high-frequency trading that is dealt with or deals with the flash trading. In other words, the combination of the two that could be in jeopardy as well. So is there a typical buying pattern? Well, one thing you could look at is end of day. One of the things that we've seen is that last half hour, 15 minutes, 10 minutes of the day, we see spikes, S&P 500. Well, we see big companies. We can see their footprints on block orders where we see things like J.P. Morgan, Merrill Lynch buying just dramatic amounts or selling. But usually lately it's been buying just gigantic chunks of SPY as an example. Now, when they do that, it technically buys a basket of the S&P 500. They buy S&P futures. And what happens is that the entire market gets this giant move up. And we've seen that when the market is at a trough during the day and all of a sudden it just moves up dramatically. How does that happen? Everybody all of a sudden wakes up and decides to buy in? Well, maybe, but usually, or news maybe, that could be the case too. But usually what it is these big buyers come in and buy blocks, and it really just scoops up the whole market at once and moves it in the direction that they want to move it. So, with that, I also think that a lot of things happen to be moving because of mutual funds, because, mutual funds really got their butt kicked last year pretty bad. The equity, domestic and foreign equities got really hurt. And they're trying to do whatever they can to make back money and to win back the, kind of the trust of the people that they have been investing for. So that was interesting. I want to just pick up on one more conversation. What happened I saw this week was, I had to do a double take. It was about the FDIC. And Sheila Blair, who is currently the head of the FDIC, is seemingly they're running out of money. With the recent, Colonial Bank and a few other banks here and there. I think it's 94 banks this year that have gone under. Some of them have been taken over by others, but again, backed most of the time by the FDIC. Some have just been taken out, and of course, the depositors had to be paid. Well, the FDIC seems to be running low on money, and they don't want to ask the government, Timothy Geithner at the Treasury, for money. For whatever reason, some differences, some personality issues, whatever. Now we're getting into, personality conflicts. We're trying to save the economy. But yet, I think that would be a real blow to the FDIC. They're trying to come up with very creative ways in order to come up with this. Now, listen what the latest discussion is, which I don't think is going to happen. There's too much confusion with this. The FDIC would actually borrow money. Now, get this. Borrow money from the quote-unquote big and strong banks to then pay off the problems with the small banks and the ones that are going out of business. Now think about that for a second. The government is going to now be borrowing money at some rate from the banks that are already taking money from the government at like a zero rate, or 0 to 0.25 to be exact. Now what happens if the strong bank gets weak and can't pay the interest of the government? I guess they back them anyway, right? So it's kind of an interesting way to backdoor money back to the banks, right? I mean, the spread they get on that would be just amazing. But the relationship seems way too incestuous to me because there's so many problems that can topple all of this, and then we're just back to the government anyway, getting the money from them to supplement the banks that are failing, of course. So I don't really think the relationship of the banks should be one that's going to actually provide a backstop for the smaller banks, because I think what really should be happening is the banks that received, you know, such amazing amounts of money from the government to begin with should be paying a higher premium, if you will, for the FDIC. I mean, otherwise it falls on the taxpayer. So, you know, it's going to eventually fall on the taxpayer anyway, right? I mean, but nonetheless, kind of a harebrained plan, and I don't think it's going to come to fruition, but it's going to be something that's going to be in the works. I mean, they're working pretty hard at coming up with alternative measures so the taxpayer doesn't get burnt here. And they've done a tremendous job so far, but yet at the end of the day, we know the taxes are going up because we know the budget deficit just went to $1.5 trillion. Whether or not it was a leftover or not from the last administration, I don't really care. Bottom line is that that's going to be a taxing event for us in the future. Well, without getting too much into a rant and a rave on this, I'll just say that we'll cut it here. And I wish you the best of a week. We have a great guest coming on next week all about the banking industry, and that's why I kind of saved that little point to the end. He was a former analyst with Citi and a few other places that really has written some amazing papers, and I think that we're going to find him very interesting. I know that I do. And I want to thank you for listening again. Just a reminder, if you want to see the information about what we talked about, any stocks that were mentioned, or anything about this episode, hop on over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and just click show notes on the top, and all the different episodes come up, and you can just check it out there. And of course, follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, trying to bring that Twitter number up over, I don't know, $5,000, that's my goal. So just stop what you're doing right now, go over to Twitter, /Andrew Horowitz, one word, and follow me. Then you'll get the podcast as soon as they come out. And anything else we're writing about, like we wrote about Microsoft's new secret tablet this week, which is really neat, put a video up about it, and talked about some other positions as well and some of our thoughts on these markets. Until next time, folks, thanks for listening. Tell a friend. This is Andrew Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Have a great week.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.